This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:48 in the morning, Thursday, the 18th of March, and you're listening to The Morning Run. Now, we're running a poll on Twitter this morning asking you, does the per-Makassar stimulus package address the economic concerns currently faced by Malaysians? There are four options, so do let us know because the poll will be running till 9 a.m. and we're very curious what you think. Because, as we all know, yesterday there was a new stimulus package worth 20 billion ringgit aimed at extending existing initiatives for sectors affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. So the strategic programs to empower the people and economy, otherwise known as per-Makassar, consists of 20 initiatives and will provide a fiscal injection of 11 billion ringgit. So the scheme covers four pillars: to control the COVID-19 outbreak, to steer economic recovery, to strengthen the country's competitiveness, and to ensure inclusivity.
Wow, that's a lot.
That's
a word salad for you, Shawnee. So we can't list all the 20 initiatives because then the show would end. But some of the initiatives include 5 billion ringgit to the National Immunization Plan, 700 million for a three-month extension of the Wage Subsidy Program 3.0 to sectors affected by MCO, including tourism, allocation for small infrastructure works for G1 to G4 contractors raised from 2.5 to 5 billion ringgit, and RM 30 million to help women entrepreneurs shift their business online.
So to help us break this down further is Dr. Juwita Muhammad, fellow at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies. Thanks for joining us this morning, Juwita. Now, do the initiatives correctly address the specific pain points suffered by local businesses, especially the SMEs, which have been complaining about cash flow issues?
After a year since our first MCO, the assistance highlighted in the per-Makassar program are very much welcomed. My only concern is on the disbursement process and the criteria for application. We observed the same challenges last year when a share of the MSME community was not able to tap into the microcredit programs due to additional requirements such as registration at LHDN and the like. Even though the assistant was meant for them, due to additional criteria, they were not able to tap into the assistance.
So it sounds like the issue is distribution and the bureaucracy of getting out the funds and support, because the intentions are there, but the execution is flawed.
Yes, I'm not sure whether there were improvements made, but looking at the different assistance, there might be targets that would not be able to reach the assistance, and this has to be fully proofed, I feel.
And now, what are your initial thoughts on the Tekun National, Tekun Mobilepreneur, and Tekun Postpreneur programs for informal workers that will actually see them getting an assistance of up to 5,000 ringgit and will allow them to purchase motorcycles, vans, or even lorries?
Well, again, we see that in the past year when unemployment increased drastically, displaced workers tend to turn to the informal sector and the gig economy to secure their livelihoods. My concern is, again, on the documents needed for these workers to get access to the assistance. If they are pasar malam sellers or online sellers from home, what kind of documentation would be needed as proof of their business activities? What are the steps needed to access these assistance? I feel that these are important questions to have the answers to, and we need the related agencies, government agencies, to clarify that for the recipients.
Right, yeah, I think you also highlighted again the concern of execution. But just want to shift it a bit. Do you think we will see more effort on the part of manufacturing and services companies now that there's a safe at work program and tax incentives of up to 50,000 ringgit for workers' housing expenses?
Well, let me go back to our CPTPP commitment. Under the commitment, member countries like Malaysia we need to ratify the ILO convention. This convention highlights 8 different principles concerning labor standards, and this would include a provision that can enable workers to push for the improvement of their working conditions. The expenses related to workers should be the responsibility of the companies and not the government. I feel that a stricter penalization mechanism is needed, supported by transparent monitoring and governance executed by the related agencies and law enforcement are very much needed. The problem of workers' housing has been exposed in the past years, even before the pandemic. I believe that there is no excuse for workers to be treated badly or housed badly, just so that companies can maximize their profits. Here, I believe that the ratification of the CPTPP is very much needed and might very much encouraged so that we can adopt an international standard when it comes to treating our local and also foreign workers.
And meanwhile, there seems to be a lot of push for tourism in this stimulus package. So we've got wage subsidies and assistance for tourism operators and homestays too. Will it be enough to kickstart the industry though?
Well, the wage subsidies would cover other sectors as well that had to halt their business activities during the lockdown. So again, here, a year on after our first lockdown, businesses are still in survival mode. They have cut down costs and have shed workers in the past year to be able to stay alive. So it is highly likely that many workers in these sectors have been let go in the duration of a year. And it is highly unlikely that the tourism activities will bounce back immediately, especially when Selangor, KL and Putrajaya are still considered as red zones. Yep. With further restriction on mobility. So even though the assistance are very much needed for the sector, without policy supporting the tourism industry, such as the introduction of travel bubble or vaccination passport, it will pose risk to travelers before the vaccination rollout program is executed in its entirety. So the last thing we want is to have more red zones due to the tourism cluster.
Just a question and deep dive, right? There was a very interesting subsidy, a 300 ringgit device subsidy for B40 households that will allow each child in school access to digital device to help with online learning. But seriously, right, we have challenges with internet and data access for those households. Is this a waste of money?
Well, I feel that this program will help parents, the B40 parents, equip each school children in their care with the much needed digital device for online learning. But nevertheless, with disruptions on trade activities and to regional or global value chains, with high demand on these devices, the government needs to also monitor the prices of the products and also make sure that affordable devices are available to be purchased domestically in line with the rising demand. So you're right, apart from the issue related to the supply of the product, the issue of connectivity and access to the internet in rural areas need to be addressed by the government to ensure that both software and hardware infrastructure are available to support online learning nationwide, especially in the rural areas in the east part, in the east coast of Peninsula Malaysia and also East Malaysia specifically.
And Juwita, this Permakasa program, which is an additional stimulus of 20 billion ringgit, I mean, it is clearly meant to address some of the short-term impacts brought upon by the pandemic. But how does this actually impact the country financially in the long term? Because we do have limited fiscal headroom.
Well, from the announcement yesterday by the Prime Minister, it is clear that the government intends to borrow to finance its spending post-pandemic. The Prime Minister announced that Sukuk bonds will be offered as government bonds to finance government spending in the next few years. Learning from past mistakes, the fact that dependence on foreign currency borrowing contributes to currency mismatches and can make countries like Malaysia more vulnerable to crisis due to external shocks. So by now, we all know that there are risks of that, especially for a developing country like Malaysia. So with this said, it is worth considering the Sukuk bonds to be denominated in Malaysian ringgit so that the changes of the value in the USD will not affect the repayment value and its schedule by the Malaysian taxpayers in the medium to long term. So Bank Negara has all the guidelines to issue Sukuk bonds denominated in local currency. So again, this is very important so that future taxpayers are not overburdened by the changes in value of the USD, again, due to different externalities.
But just very quickly, does this then mean we have to raise our debt ceiling, which is currently kept, I believe, at 60% of GDP, or will it be able to be financed within this limit, though?
Well, again, that depends. I'm not so sure about the amount that we were going to raise in USD. But if it is beyond the debt ceiling, then again, the government has to table it at the parliament so that it can be debated and passed by all the MPs.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Dr. Juwita Mohamad, fellow at Institute of Strategic and International Studies, Malaysia, otherwise known as ISIS, giving us her view on the recent stimulus package.
I think you raised a very good point about whether we can spend this. One of the things about Pemerkasa is that 11 billion was a direct cash support. I think in the past stimulus packages, generally direct support was less than 50%.
A lot of it was from the banks.
From the banks and EPF. Indirect.
Yeah.
Exactly. So the question here more pertinent now is how will we finance this additional support? Now, what is worrying for me is in the earlier stages of the conversation we had with her was that implementation seems to be
yes.
lacking.
Have we not learned any lessons is my question. It's 1 year into the MCO, right?
Correct. But if you go to the Ministry of Finance website, there is an organization or a theme called Laksana that's meant to track the performance of these funds. And already actually you see there are 44 reports. So for me, why is there not that translation of impact on the ground?
Well, up next, Chuang will be speaking to KH Lim, founder of Singhing Electric, on The Breakfast Grill. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.